This morning in the Atlanta airport, no one's missing a meal on Mac Wilburn's watch.
With 11 restaurants to serve passengers, he's got dining for every destination.
And it all started when Mac talked with First Horizon Bank about opening a franchise in the airport. Now it's open for business and cleared for takeoff. First Horizon Bank, let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Mac. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
Friday to you. Hello there. How's it going? Heath Klein in for the king today. That was not the plan. But then, anyone who's ever been a pet owner knows sometimes the pets have other plans. So, Chuck has multiple dogs, but Chubby, the elder golden retriever, apparently has a big fondness for eating napkins. Likes them a lot. My wife has dog sat for Chuck previously and didn't know, but Chubby was trying to get her napkin while she was eating. And she's like, what's with this, Chubby? Well, I don't know where he got them, but apparently, from what King tells me, Chubby got into the napkins, and so he had to take him to the vet. He's expected to be fine, but had to take him to the vet. So while King is dealing with that, we will keep you company for the next couple of hours right here on the Chuck Oliver Show. At least that's the cover story. Is it possible that Chubby likes eating napkins? Yes, that's possible. But did anything else happen in the last night that could explain Chuck's absence? We don't talk basketball much on this program, but last night, Alabama victorious over number one seed UNC. And so what that means is that now you have Alabama in the Elite Eight. And Chuck is, after all, an Auburn man. And Auburn lost to Yale in the first round to start this tournament. Is it possible that it was all just too much? That Chuck said, hey, I can't do it today. I got to get a day. Is it possible? I'm not accusing. I'm just saying the timing. Because Chubby, as far as we know, can't talk. So he's an easy fall guy to pin it on. All kidding aside, if you are an Auburn person, man, right now, you got to be super frustrated because you are looking at a situation where Nick Saban retires. Chuck's talked about this a bunch. Saban retires. If you're Auburn, you're supposed to feel like, hey, man, happy days are here again. Big opportunity that we are cashing in on now. They're going to take a big step back. We don't know what Alabama is going to do with Kalen DeBoer. We have no idea yet how that'll look when he has to do it week in, week out, on the field, in the SEC, with the expectations and pressures that come with this job, which you can be a really good head coach, but there are certain jobs that you may not be really good as a head coach in. Billy Gillespie was a really good basketball head coach at Texas A&M. Then he got the Kentucky job. And for 2 years, everybody involved, him, the fans, the administrators, everybody had an absolutely miserable experience because he was not the right fit for that job. If the only thing that you had to do to be the Kentucky basketball coach was X's and O's and nothing else, Billy Gillespie might have been fine, but that's not what the job is. So we'll see all the other things that come with being Alabama coach that were not there at Fresno. We're certainly not there in a D3 school in South Dakota or there in even Washington, where you're not even the highest profile football coach in town, the Seahawks coach is. We'll see how Kalen DeBoer deals with all that this fall. And maybe Alabama fans by midway will be saying, oh, no, we're in trouble. Maybe. But at the moment, the questions that there were about DeBoer, would he be able to recruit effectively in the SEC country when he hasn't spent a lot of time there? So far, that staff that he has been able to do a reasonable job, it seems. He himself has blended in at least at the start and I've been open with the media, been on a lot of radio shows in Alabama in particular to kind of let people get to know him. Fans seem to feel like, okay, this guy, I didn't know much about him, but he seems like an okay dude. Things are at least off to about as good a start as you could ask for if you're Alabama and you have had to replace Nick Saban and you haven't even gotten to tax day yet. At the moment, it's going about as well as you could hope for. And then you couple that with the fact that Auburn so far hasn't been able to really get the engine to fully turn over yet under Hugh Freeze. Doesn't mean it won't happen. It's only year two. But he's not recruiting and landing the top talent that I think fans just sort of assumed, well, if he was landing top talent in Oxford, he's certainly going to land top talent and probably better talent, top to bottom, at Auburn. He's landed some individual guys. I mean, Cam Coleman, my goodness, you can't hear enough good things about Cam Coleman. But it doesn't feel like the overall energy is there the way people thought it would, and particularly when people think about the quarterback spot and the idea that at least right now, Peyton Thorne looks like the likeliest guy to be the starter for another year. I don't know that anybody's too excited about that. So if you're an Auburn person, first you see that happen, that Bama seems to have made a relatively seamless transition for the moment, and you're a year and a half in and not feeling it yet. You say, well, at least their baseball team's a disaster because, I mean, my goodness, you had a coach get involved in an NCAA scandal. Bama baseball is going to be a mess for a while. You looked at the Bama baseball standings recently? 20-6. Meanwhile, Auburn, 1-6 in the SEC so far. Ouch. That's not great. And now basketball. Now basketball, you've got Alabama on the brink of a trip to the Final Four and Auburn losing in round one to Yale. Tough times for Auburn people. One other thing from that from last night, this is what I do think from the college football front is going to be pretty cool about these next few years of the playoff. Maybe you like the idea of going past four. Maybe you thought that we've already had some teams in the first four that didn't need to be there. You know, you think about some years where it felt like we didn't need, but at most three teams. Now we're going to have 12. How good could these games be? We'll see. But one of these two teams is going to go to their first ever Final Four. Clemson or Alabama, they're going to play, and one of them is going to the first Final Four in school history. That's going to be pretty cool. Will either one of them win the title? Probably not. That's the whole thing. Like, everybody understands right now UConn has been steamrolling people. They've won all of their last nine NCAA games by 15 points or more except for one. If anybody not named UConn wins the title, it'll be a big surprise. And if the team that wins turns out to be either Alabama or Clemson, it'll be an even bigger surprise just because they're not projected to be even there in the first place, much less good enough to eventually take down the monster that is UConn. But it doesn't matter. For either program, you make the Final Four, you're going to hang a banner for that. That's going to be the kind of thing that 20 years from now, the guys on the team for whichever one of them makes the Final Four, they'll be brought back to Tuscaloosa, brought back to Clemson and have, you know, honored by the crowd. And, oh, man, I'll never forget when fill in the blank hit that big shot to get us to the Final Four. That'll be a part of those programs' future forever. In football, there hasn't been an equivalent to that. There really hasn't. Because, okay, like Cincinnati, for example, making the playoff, that'll be remembered by Cincinnati fans for a long time. But because of the way that things worked, where if you made it as that four seed and you weren't supposed to be there, you almost certainly were going to get overwhelmed, you haven't had that chance to have a run, to have a breakthrough. The first time that somebody does that, even if you don't win a college football championship, if you are somebody who, for example, becomes the first team that goes on the road and wins a playoff game and advances on to the next round, that's going to be something big. People talk about, remember when we went into Notre Dame and we knocked them off and we moved on to the next round? Like, this is going to mean more, a lot more than what has been available in the past. Maybe once upon a time you could say, hey, we won the Orange Bowl. You think anybody at Georgia cares about winning the Orange Bowl last year? I mean, it's a prestige bowl, but Okay. Missouri is not excited because they won the Cotton Bowl. Missouri is excited because they beat Ohio State. The fact it happened in the Cotton Bowl is fine, but nobody is walking around Columbia, Missouri saying, we won the Cotton Bowl. It's all about we beat Ohio State. Why are we going to be good enough to maybe challenge for the SEC and shock the world next year? Because we were good enough to beat Ohio State in a bowl game. What bowl game? Who cares? There's going to be so many opportunities over the next few years for programs to have those kind of moments. First program team to win a playoff game. First one to win on the road. First one to win two playoff games in advance and actually make be the first thing that we've had that's like a Cinderella in the history of the playoffs. Is anybody going to be good enough to come from outside the top four to win the playoff? Maybe. Is anybody be good enough to come away from maybe outside about the top six or seven? Probably not. Just because the reality is, like this year, for example, had we had the playoff expanded to 12, Georgia would have likely been the fifth seed. Kirby Smart, in a piece we will talk more about later, Chris Lowe of ESPN scheduled to join us, and he has a big piece up today with Kirby Smart. And Kirby Smart talks about this idea that he, in the playoff, is not crazy about the idea that his Georgia team last year, undefeated all year, back-to-back champs, you finally lose a game and you would have been a fifth seed as the four teams ahead of you are the conference champions. He doesn't love that, but that would have been the reality. So you're going to have some of that. You're going to have like the fifth and sixth seeds maybe be a one-loss Georgia or someone similar, a one-loss big-time team from the Big Ten, you know, whoever. But once you get past those first two, I don't know that anybody's going to be able to put together a run. You never know. Maybe there's somebody who had bad injuries early in the season, lost a couple of games they shouldn't because they were beaten up, but now that they're healthy, they would have been the team maybe that could have been good enough to be that one or two seed in the first place. Maybe you'll get one of those. I don't know if we're going to get any real Cinderellas, though. I don't know if you're going to get a Penn State that wasn't good enough to beat Ohio State and wasn't good enough to beat Michigan in the regular season, but went 10-2, and now here they are in the playoff, and they're going to open with a game against somebody like Missouri or Ole Miss. Maybe you win that one, maybe you don't, but it's hard for me to believe then you're going to start stringing together, you know, two and three more wins. That seems unlikely. But that first Penn State team that wins a playoff game will immediately be a much bigger deal than if that team wins, whatever, the Bowl at Orlando, whatever they're calling it these days, against an SEC team. Everybody gets a chance to achieve something new and something exciting. Whoever gets it tomorrow between Alabama and Clemson, again, it'll be a program definer, even if they don't win at the Final Four, even if they lose by 20 at the Final Four. It'll be a program definer. And those kind of moments in college football really haven't been around. Now they're going to be. I think that's kind of cool. All right. It is the Chuck Oliver Show. Again, Heath in for Chuck today. We will keep you company for the next couple hours talking some college football. Got some Miami talk coming your way in about 15 minutes. Keep it right here.
More college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Chuck Oliver Show. He's fine rolling on here, hanging in for Chuck today. I'll be back with you coming up on Monday. No spring games of any major schools this weekend. It is, of course, Easter weekend, and so that doesn't by itself stop schools from having spring games. But in general, if you want people to come to your spring game, it's probably a better idea to do it on a weekend where people may not have other stuff going on with family travel and whatnot. Again, some programs want to wrap it up really early. Obviously, in the case of Missouri, for example, they're already done. They've been done for a couple of weeks. Drinkwitz wanted to get it done early. Muschamp, when he was at South Carolina, was that kind of guy. To the point, you kind of shake your head and say, why even have a spring game if you're not going to try and do anything with it? Because the reality is that these spring games, if you're doing them, they're for the fans. They're not for you. You can have a scrimmage without anybody watching anytime you want. you don't need a quote-unquote spring game if you're a coach. So the only reason to have one is to say, all right, let's put on a little bit of a showcase for the fans, give them something to be excited about, maybe sell some tickets. Some places that's more of an issue than others, but you know, maybe sell some tickets, maybe turn it into a thing for recruiting. Some programs do a lot more with that than others. The thing that was always so odd about it with Muschamp at South Carolina when I covered him there to me was that he had a rationale that made sense for why he wanted to do it earlier, but there wasn't any reason he couldn't have moved it back 1 week, and he just wouldn't do it. He insisted on having his spring game the same weekend as the Final Four at a school where the women's team is extremely popular and is likely to make the Final Four 3 out of 4 years right now with the way that they're performing. You never know. They could lose this weekend, but more often than not, when you go into the tournament, they're projected as a Final Four team, and there's a meaningful chunk of your fan base that might choose, depending on where things are, to travel there. 2017, South Carolina had their men's team and their women's team in the Final Four at the same time, which is a ridiculous accomplishment from the men's team because it was literally the first time they won a tournament game, period, since Nixon. But it still happened. And so, you know, here you are, you're doing your spring game, and you've got two Final Four teams and fans all over the place. And it's like, what are you even bothering with? I am curious to see whether or not there's going to be a trend away from spring games here in the future, and whether or not we're going to see more programs, if they do them, go to the Muschamp model of saying, eh, we'll do them, but we're not doing them all that much. Because right now, you look at it, next week, Auburn's got their spring game. They've got theirs on the 6th. You've got a bunch more programs doing theirs on the 13th, and then another wave of programs on the 20th. If you are one of those programs on the 20th, that means that you are already behind, at least a little bit, unless your reason for doing it on the 20th is to say, we might be able to bring some kids in out of the transfer portal and let them see a game atmosphere. That would be the only reason at this point for anybody to let their spring game go past April 15th. Because on April 15th, the portal opens up and everybody everywhere is going to suddenly be in the marketplace. Some will be more aggressive than others. If you're a program that hasn't done things in advance to get people in, that's very different than if you're a program that has already sent out feelers and made it known, hey, we've got an opportunity waiting for you should you choose to get in, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, on April 15th. We've got an opportunity for you that might be worth considering. We'll see how quickly some deals get done. You know how an NFL free agency, they have what they call the legal tampering period, where on Monday you can start talking for 48 hours, but the deals can't officially be done till Wednesday, and then you've got the Adam Schefters and Jay Glazers of the world that are letting you know that all the deals are done within like 30 minutes of the tampering period beginning. Kind of feels like there, if that's the legal tampering period, perhaps there's been some other types of tampering going on beforehand that they didn't really work out these complex million-dollar deals in 10 minutes on the back of a napkin. We're going to probably see some of that in football. Some guys that get into the portal, and when they do, they get into the portal and say, please do not contact me. Translation, I already know where I want to go. That doesn't mean that has to be shady, by the way. It could be, or it could just be, hey, I'm going back to my home school. You know, I'm from Tennessee, and I left Tennessee, and I went somewhere else, and now I'm coming back to play at, you know, Middle Tennessee State or Vanderbilt or wherever, but I know where I'm going. I'm coming home. I don't need to hear from 9 coaches. Can be that. But unless you're bringing them to campus on the 20th, having 2 or 3 spring practices to still deal with after the deadline for the portal isn't going to make any sense at all. And I think this year already people are realizing what's about to happen 2 weeks from Monday is completely different than everything else we've seen. The NCAA, after Tennessee said, no, we're going to court. You're not going to punish us on the Nico thing. We dare you. We're going to go to court. We're going to get an injunction, and we're going to have it just flat out be, we can do whatever we want, and you can't enforce anything. You can't enforce your transfer rules. You can't enforce anything about recruiting inducements with NIL. You can't enforce jack. All crime is legal, buddy. That's what they went to court on, and they won an injunction. And the NCAA, after losing and losing and losing, finally has just thrown their hands up and said, all right, we give up. So we haven't had a portal where everybody can operate like the folks that were pushing the limit as much as possible. I saw where Ward Manuel, the athletics director at Michigan, says this week they're going to still do it the right way. Okay, we'll see. But we've never had one where everybody, from the most aggressive big money schools down to Louisiana Monroe, if they want to, whatever their version is of pushing the limit, they can do it too. We've never seen one like this. And I think after we do, the coaches that said, well, you know, the 20th, we don't want to conflict with the Masters. A lot of people in the South like the Masters. We want to keep the kids on campus and focused a little bit longer. It'll be good for them to have an extra week of practice and less time to get distracted before we need them back again. There's all these different rationales. Muschamp's rationale for doing it early at South Carolina, even if he was basically damaging his own program's chance for a showcase day, was anybody who needs surgeries, they'll be able to have their surgeries and have more time to recover. So we want to wrap spring practice up early. And I want them to get another month of weightlifting in on campus, but they don't have to be doing anything but weightlifting. They can be more focused on conditioning and weightlifting. That was his rationale. Everybody's got one. It's not just random. And some schools do run away from the Masters because they've got meaningful parts of their fan base, especially booster types, that go to the Masters. So they run away from that. Everybody's going to have to say, nope, we got to get this done before the 15th. We cannot have time hanging around on the backside of the portal unless they use it for recruiting. So I'm fascinated by what's about to happen over the next 3 weeks and how many of those schools with a spring game on the 20th are kicking themselves saying, yeah, this was not what we needed. We needed to be done on the 13th so we could be 100% focused on portal, because that's where the talent is and that's where our resources need to be. If you're Auburn, for better or worse, man, you have plenty of time to evaluate everybody in the portal, make contacts, and be saying, hey, watch your phone. 1 minute after the deadline, we'll be texting. All right, it is the Chuck Oliver Show. Heath in for Chuck today. Talk some Miami coming up. David Lake scheduled to join us from InsideTheU.com. Find out how things are going for Cristobal and Company coming up.
Now back to Southern Sports Today and the...
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
Tonight in Arkansas, there's a mother tucking in her daughter and turning off the light. A business owner is burning the midnight oil. An at-home dinner date is plating up possibility. And it's all happening under one roof. How? The power of a conversation, like the one John from Integrity Solutions had with First Horizon Bank about his vision for a sustainable mixed-use building. Now it's not just words, it's life. First Horizon Bank, let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/John. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
Chuck Oliver Show.
Show here on a Friday. Heath Klein in for Chuck today. Glad you could be hanging here with us. Plenty for sure to talk about. Just for going over that spring game's not happening this weekend, as far as I could tell, anywhere. Not just prominent programs in the South, but anywhere because of it being Easter weekend as much as anything. And then also some programs just need a little more time to get things done. But there's plenty of spring football to check in on, and so we want to head down to South Florida. Join us right now, our truest reporter on the Miami Hurricanes. He comes to us on the Duncan Newsmaker line. It is David Lake from InsideTheU.com. David, how are you?
Doing well, Heath. Good to be on with you.
Thank you for making the time. Yeah, one of the things that I think everybody was really curious about was how Cam Ward was going to look at Miami, and just watching some of the tape. Anybody who hadn't seen him at Washington State, because you know, the Cougars only get so much exposure on this side of the country, anybody watching the video can see why they're excited about him. I'm curious, you knew what the hype was coming in. Now you've seen it firsthand. Anything surprise you about what you're seeing from Cam Ward so far?
I mean, just seeing it in person, it is surprising. I guess, you know, just he's the real deal. He is legit. I think everything he showed on tape at Washington State is showing up at Miami. I think the thing that shows up most in person when you're watching him is his pocket presence is just different than these recent quarterbacks Miami's been starting here in recent years. He just has that natural feel for pressure and knows where to go to buy time or extend plays. And then he, of course, has the arm talent to throw with accuracy and anticipation. He's also just a better fit year over year compared to Tyler Van Dyke for this Shannon Dawson air raid system. I think we're going to see, with Mario Cristobal, there's always going to be an emphasis on run game and physicality. But I do think in the passing phase of offense, there's going to be more air raid type of elements like the quick game, the quick passing game, tunnel screens. I think we're going to see some more deep shots and, throws to the sideline. And I think this is all just tailored more so to Cam Ward's skill set than it was for Tyler Van Dyke last year. So I think he's a perfect fit for this offense. He's definitely validated everything Miami hoped he would be. And now it's about kind of improving the pieces around him, maybe with some shopping in the spring portal window.
It's funny you said what you said there, because that's kind of where I wanted to go next. The one thing about Cam Ward is that, of course, he is someone who originally had said, hey, I'm going into the draft. Now he's not. If you look at next year, the perception is that it's kind of wide open, whereas this year, Caleb Williams, Drake May, both were hyped up as sort of 1-2 prospects at the start of the draft before the season even started. Then a guy like Jaden Daniels gets into the mix. Next year, at least at the moment, is perceived as being a quieter year for pro prospects at quarterback. Ward might be a guy who could even have a chance to get to the head of the line. How much do they need to focus in part on making sure they're developing him for that? Because for the Canes, to get a kid back into the first round as a quarterback, show you can play in this system and do that, that would be a huge deal. But at the same time, Shannon Dawson does what he does. How do they strike that blend?
Yeah, I do think, for Mario Cristobal understands the narrative surrounding him with quarterback development, right? Fair or unfair, there is somewhat of a track record there that, is fair to question, I think. So I do think that he fully understands how it is important to help Cam Ward maximize whatever he can be. Now, will he be the first quarterback taken in the NFL draft? To me, there's a long ways to go before I say anything like that. But he's certainly talented. I think maybe this year he would have maybe been drafted in the 7th round. In terms of declaring for the NFL draft and all that, that was more of a leverage play, I think, for NIL. And, he got what he set out to get ultimately. So good negotiating tactics there. But certainly around the program, Mario Cristobal wants to be known as a coach that embraces quarterback play, productive quarterback play, everything that comes with that. And he definitely wants to help Cam Ward go out and have an ultra-productive career.
What is it like to cover the first ever 9th-year senior in college football?
Yeah, it is crazy, isn't it? He's coming back, quite frankly, to a loaded tight end room. Elijah Arroyo, he was injured last year, just never really confident from his injury that he sustained in 2022. So he's looking good this spring, and he's looking like he'll be tight end one. Then last year, Riley Williams was kind of a freshman that led the tight end in receiving. He's probably going to be tight end two. And honestly, Cam McCormick, who's the 9th-year guy you're referencing, he's going to be battling a true freshman that is really, really impressing this spring, Elijah Lofton, who's like a 6'1", 250 tight end. Looks strange, makes no sense in terms of body type, how he can do the things he does, but he is emerging as one of their better playmakers this spring. So Cam McCormick is a 9th-year guy. He's had a lot of bad injury luck. It is definitely an interesting story, but I do think, of course, he brings some veteran leadership. He came with Mario from Oregon, so there's familiarity there. And, you know, just having a guy like that in the locker room, I think Miami sees a lot of value in that.
Yes, for those of you driving in your car who thought I spoke wrong, I wasn't joking. It is real. Cam McCormick is a ninth-year senior at the University of Miami. Does he have, like, a law degree by now? Like, how is this even possible?
Right. No, I mean, it's crazy because I think about it, like, he, from a Miami standpoint, his recruiting class was the same as linebacker Shaquille Quarterman, which seems like ages ago. That was 2016 was his recruiting class. So he's an older guy. And, you know, I do think he's racking up bachelor's classes. They don't necessarily have to take graduate classes, but he's definitely making the most of the college experience.
Dude's got 14 minors. It's amazing. David Lake with us from InsideTheU.com looking at Miami. Jokes about McCormick aside, though, they need more out of that tight end room. And historically, Miami has had a lot of good tight ends through the years. Last year in particular, just it was way too quiet for what a Canes tight end room should be doing.
It's a significant point of emphasis this spring. And again, I just think, just from Elijah Arroyo being back healthy, that room is going to produce more, which is, you know, to me, tight ends are so valuable in the red zone. And that's also a point of emphasis this offseason for Miami, is getting more touchdowns rather than field goals in the red zone. And I think Elijah Arroyo he's definitely has the athleticism to be a guy that, you know, is a 500-yard receiving tight end type of guy. So he's out there in his knee brace. So hopefully, you know, knock on wood, he continues to stay healthy. But yes, tight end is definitely going to be much more of a weapon here this year than it was last year.
Other side of the ball, the big question going into practice seemed to be the secondary. How is that looking like it's coming together?
Yeah, I mean, frankly, I still view it as a question mark. I think safety, to me, is a question mark. I mean, they're replacing Cam Kitchens and James Williams, who are going to be drafted here coming up. They brought in Savion Riley as a transfer from Vanderbilt, who, you know, was a rotational guy there, and here he's kind of expected to be a starter. So we'll see how that goes. They brought in Michelle Powell, who's kind of more of a big nickel type, but he can play safety as well. He comes in from Washington. And then they have elevated a guy, third-year guy Jaden Harris, who's getting some reps with the first team as well. So, frankly, I think that's a position that they need to hit the portal on, just to bring in another guy maybe with some experience if there is one out there. In terms of corner, I feel comfortable with their starters, their top three, but after that it's kind of a significant drop-off there. So I wouldn't be surprised if they utilize the portal to get more depth at cornerback. So front seven looks good, though. But that secondary, to me, is a question mark. If you're looking, if you're trying to compete for an ACC championship, to me, you got to shore up that spot a little bit.
Where are the Canes with regards to NIL? You know, obviously Ruiz, when this all started, was kind of the high profile guy for different reasons.
Sure.
He's faded in prominence, but I know other people have been looking to step in and kind of fill those shoes. Once April 15th rolls around and there's more people than ever maybe willing to put some bags out there because of what has happened with the injunctions and whatnot, how is Miami prepared to compete if it's a dollar-for-dollar thing?
I think they're totally fine. Their collective is called Canes Connection, and they have essentially absorbed all of the agreements John Ruiz had going at the time. He's definitely taken a big step back in this NIL stuff with Miami. And so, you know, they've gone the traditional collective route, and it's very organized. They would know better than me, so I'll just tell you what they tell me. They feel like they're kind of a top 15 collective in college football, and they feel like they're very competitive in terms of what they can offer. Miami, as you know, the city of Miami has plenty of money, and this is a strength of Mario Cristobal, is being able to tap into those resources, similar to his recruiting strengths, right? He develops really good relationships with a lot of local businessmen, and my understanding is they have the coffers filled, ready to go when the transfer portal opens on April 15th. So I would expect them to be active, whoever enters.
Numbers-wise, how much shopping could they do? And I understand some kids will obviously come off the roster too, but how many numbers-wise would you think they might be trying to bring in here?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of depends on who's available, but I look at running back as a position of need. I look at if there's a wide receiver one type, that would be a need. I think they want depth at linebacker and then maybe two or three secondary. So I would say five or six would be a starting point. And then if they feel like there's more out there that would help the team, they certainly wouldn't shy away from that.
Last thing for you, David, and again, it's David Lake from InsideTheU.com here on the Chuck Oliver Show. Mario Cristobal, the game coach, gets criticized, and things like the end of the Georgia Tech game are why.
Sure.
Has he done anything? Is there anything he can do to demonstrate that he is working on that? Is that something you could tweak with your staff, bring somebody in to be more of the time manager guy in the box if you've got other things on your mind on the sideline? Is there anything that's demonstrable he's done to try and address what does appear to be at least a fair criticism?
Yeah, I don't really know if there's really going to be any changes in that regard. I will say, I mean, he's a very self-aware guy. So he will admit to mistakes, and he understands his weaknesses. But at the same time, he is definitely a micromanager, and I think that's what ultimately gets him in trouble. You know, that paralysis by analysis cliche, I think, applies to Mario Cristobal. He overthinks things, and that's where you see some odd timeouts with game management. You know, regarding the Georgia Tech thing, to me, that's just kind of a machismo type of we're not gonna end the game kneeling. We're gonna end the game with physicality. Now that I think he has maybe changed his mind on. But
you can't make that mistake twice. I mean, it's almost impossible to, even if you make the mistake, to then give up the touchdown. It's almost impossible to anyway. You cannot possibly do that twice.
100%. 100%. So, you know, he played with fire and he got burned. So I think he has learned from that specific situation. But in terms of just typical game management, you know, I just think from a Miami perspective, the hope is he continues to stack talent that kind of overcomes these issues that I think you see with Mario Cristobal on game day.
That's David Lake. You can check him out InsideTheU.com. That's 247 site on Miami. David, thanks for making some time for us here on the Chuck Oliver Show.
Thank you.
There you go. A little perspective from what's going on with South Florida. Yeah, again, there's so much down there. They have, even all these years later, even after the memories of the heyday of the Canes has faded. No championships, obviously, since 2001. Not playing for a national title since 2002. No playoff appearances ever. This swagger lives on down there as a marketing tool. South Florida, just that Miami scene, is its own marketing outside of the football program. And then when you can show them, hey, look at all these guys that went to the pros, and look how it once was here, it's still a really powerful and appealing message. And especially in the transfer portal, if you've already kind of had the conventional college experience for two or three years, you've been to a nice, solid university in a nice, solid college town, and you're thinking, you know, maybe the last year or two of my career, spend it a little more like a pro, see what that's like. You can see how they would be really appealing in the transfer portal to certain kinds of kids. But once you're down there, you still are going to need to be able to put it together and actually achieve if you're ever going to get anything close to what that program once was. If they could keep the Miami talent home and develop it and then accentuate it with kids that find that message appealing, there's no reason Miami couldn't get back to being one of the best programs in the country. It's there for them. Some programs, you can't see the path. You could totally see the path in South Florida. I just don't know if Cristobal, as the game coach, is ever going to get out of his own way enough to not give away two games that way every year. If you give away two like that, are you got better talent to win the other 10 and get to the playoff? Maybe, but I wouldn't count on it. All right, it is the Chuck Oliver Show. Coming up, I saw something that I'm not real crazy about from an outlet I think a little bit more of than what they put out over the last day. We'll explain coming up.
Catch the- the king of college football no matter where you go with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
We haven't done a good job here of developing depth. We need to play. We need 22 people on offense and defense all the time to be playing. That's why we lose at the end of the year. We wear out. We get tired. We get people hurt. We got to play more people. And to do that, you've got to coach them well enough that you trust them.
That is the voice of Mac Brown talking to Josh Pate on the Late Kick program as part of a conversation that they had. And what he's saying there is not incorrect, but you want to say, well, then why weren't they developed, Mac? Like, you've been there now for a full class of players to roll through. Like, you're saying this like it's a revelation. It's happened multiple times. Why haven't you fixed it? It's probably correct that that's one of the issues that they've had. But it's just, he's talking about it like, who's responsible for this? I was like, well, that would be you, man. That would be your job. So we'll see. Maybe they can get it fixed. I don't know. He's made some changes. Obviously, Gene Chizik not going to be a part of that staff moving forward on the defensive side. New coordinator on offense last year. So maybe he'll find that mix that works for him over in Chapel Hill. There was talk Mac might retire. Obviously, he did not choose to do that. And so he's going to press forward, and first time in a while that he won't have a quarterback that is among the most touted in the sport, at least going into the season. So we'll see what effect that has on things too. But that program, it's easy to nitpick at Mac Brown and the job he's done over there, because based on the talent he brought in, they were supposed to have achieved more by now. But at the same time, you say, okay, what did it look like when he wasn't there? And the John Buntings of the world were not able to do anything with the existing talent. Carl Torbush, then Bunting, and obviously Larry Fedora had a little success, made an ACC championship game, but could not sustain. So even though Mac Brown's version of UNC football at times can be maybe a little frustrating, it still beats anything that came in between the stints of him doing UNC football. But there's something missing, and he's talking like it's just occurred to him, so we'll see if he can figure it out. The folks at The Athletic do a great job covering college football. I've got a lot of friends that work for The Athletic. I expect a lot from The Athletic because I know they've got good people, smart people. We've had plenty of them on as guests on this program. They put out a piece about the college football coaches that make up Mount Rushmore. Mount Rushmore stuff's pretty played out. But whatever, if you're going to choose to do it, how'd you do? And they had two different guys working for him put their list together, and both of them, of course, had Saban. One had Saban, Pete Carroll, Woody Hayes, and Dabo. Dabo, top four coaches of all time, Dabo. Other one went with Saban, Bill Snyder, Newt Rockne, Eddie Robinson. But I don't really care in the end about the Mount Rushmores. Then we get down to the other part. Honorable mentions. Steve Spurrier. He's the troll king of college football, poking and prodding anyone and everyone, enraging people in the sport who might take themselves a little too seriously. And he was a man after our own heart with a willingness to always take a breather for a good tea time. He saved the best arrows for his rivals, from telling Tennessee you can't spell citrus without UT to noting he loved to play Georgia in the season because he could count on a few players being suspended for offseason shenanigans. Even the fans who hated Spurrier most had to be smiling in their heart of hearts. Funny is funny. Okay. But Steve Spurrier was also an unbelievably good, you know, football coach. He came into an SEC that was absolutely wanting to do things a certain way, run the ball, play defense, and force them, adapt or die. He spawned an offensive revolution. There's dudes in football coaching right now who admit they wear visors because Steve Spurrier wore a visor when you're influential enough that you're still affecting guys' headwear almost a full decade after you left the game as an X and O on the sideline coach, I don't know. First of all, I would think maybe you should be a little farther up the food chain than Dabo. But secondly, maybe appreciate that stuff, those qualities a little bit more than the idea that, yeah, the man could bring a zinger, but it wasn't Carrot Top here. That's not what he did. He wasn't the insult comic king of college football. He was a heck of a coach. And I'm sorry, but that wasn't valued enough. A little disappointing.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
Hi, I'm Mark Beckham with Atlanta Ramjack. We specialize in only foundation repair. What is foundation repair? Foundations sink or settle. These issues need to be addressed. It only becomes more costly the longer you put it off. What is the biggest cause of foundation problem? Either poor construction, inferior site preparation, or weather. Drought causes cracks in your foundations. If you see any signs of foundation issues, please contact us at atlantaramjack.com.